Just to say that the chairperson of the committee is running late. I apparently missed the flight and he will be joining us very soon. In the meantime, I requested Honorable Gunguvele to chair the meeting in his absence. Is there any objection from members of the committee?
Information session more than anything else. We are in the exercise of listening to a very number of key justice institutions with regard to their strategic plans, their budgets, and their handover preparations. And I prefer not to talk about them, that they talk about themselves. But what I know is that we know in this country, in our quest to execute justice, we have put together various institutions. Amongst them is the public protector. And I will, if members agree with me, hand over to Ms. Baburam Shwan to lead us on the issues as prescribed on the invitation. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Maybe before I start, I will introduce my team so that you know who is here. The first person to introduce is the Deputy Public Protector, Advocate Chai. She's sitting at the back there. And the second one is the Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Mpepa, sitting here right in front of me. The third one is Ms. Toke, who is the head of provincial coordination. She's just sitting next to the gentleman here. Ms. Toke, yes. And then next to her is the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Mkun, the Chief Financial Officer. And next to me is the Executive Manager, who manages the Executive Office of the Public Protector. And then we have our communications manager, and we have our representative in our Western Cape offices. That's Ruthven Rensbeck. So that is the team chairperson. The second issue I want to raise before I continue with my presentation is to apologize for the delay in submitting the documents. Unfortunately, it came at the time, the request came at the time when we were having an intensive auditors in the office the whole of July, and this very same team was also engaged until late at night with the Auditor General. So it somehow delayed our presentation, and we tender our sincere apology for submitting these documents very late. What I will be doing, I will just briefly deal with the process of handing over, as requested by this honorable committee, followed by the Chief executive officer's presentation on the performance of the office, that is dealing with the strategic plan and performance of the year 2008-2009, and continue to chart the way forward in terms of the 2009-2010 strategic plans. And that would be followed by the chief financial officer will deal with the finances. I'm not sure I know what time we are given, but we'll try to be as brief as possible so that we can get time for questions. I'm sure you all have this document, which is this particular document. It's a document that I'll be using. It's titled Briefing by the Public Protector Advocate Mushwana. I just want to make sure we all have this this document. The honorable member there doesn't have a copy. I will not spend much on the history of the Office of the Public Protector, which is self-explanatory. I take it by now we know what it has gone through since its inception in 1995 until where we are. And I will also not spend a lot of time on the process of appointing the Public Protector and the Deputy Public Protector, because this is a process that, you know, we merely documented it for the sake of completeness. Yes?
Yes, again, I'm sure.
Yes?
This is a new term. We assume the right to be new, all of us, and to be treated as such. So what I'm trying to say is that an assumption of knowledge on our side on a number of issues would be a dangerous assumption. So maybe 1 or 2 minutes just to give us an idea of what animal are you.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I was trying to be economical in time because I'm not sure of the time limits, and maybe as you have the document, we do have the history of the Office of the Public Protector, that it was established in terms of the constitution, interim constitution, and subsequently it was included in the final constitution, and it came into being on the 1st of October 1995. And Advocate Selby Bato was the first public protector, and after him I followed, and from there we look at the process of appointing the public protector. You will know that a multi-party committee of the National Assembly is usually constituted when a public protector is to be appointed, which calls for nominations for suitable person and individuals to be appointed as public protector. And interviews are held by the committee, and candidates are recommended and submitted to the National Assembly, who will debate the names and recommend an individual for the appointment by the president. And we will know now that we also have a deputy public protector who was appointed for the first time on the first, resumed her duties from the 1st of December 2005. She has been introduced to you. And the public protector is appointed for a non-renewable term of 7 years. And it was at the request of this August committee that I'll be presenting the handover plans to ensure a smooth transfer of the institutional first step, because you want to know exactly what is it that I will be doing to ensure that the institutional memory is there. The first thing that we'll be doing is that we are going to compile a comprehensive report, and this report will also be made available to the National Assembly, and it will also be kept in the memory of our knowledge management section in the office. And the status of the report, what we'll do, I'm dealing with the contents now of this report that we'll be compiling. We'll look at the status report of the Office of the Public Protector as in 2002. The purpose here is to say, what is it that I found when I came into Office of the Public Protector? And what were the challenges? And how far have we moved from that status report of 2002? And maybe it is also important to state that when I assumed duties, the public protector had long left. I can't remember how many months. So I didn't have the opportunity of a direct handover from my predecessor. And we will also be dealing in the report with the interpretation of the constitutional mandate of the Office of the Public Protector, and it's clearly, the details are in page 5. Why we consider this to be very important is that there is always a constant debate around the mandate of the public protector. How far can the public protector go in terms of his investigation? And what matters? And we want to include in that report to say, look, this is what we have done and what we think it is our mandate. This has particularly become important in the light of the recent case of the oil gate, where the case of the public protector and Mail and Guardian has finally been the judgment has finally been handed down. If you read that judgment, you'll see even in that judgment that the main contention is the interpretation of the mandate of the public protector. That's why we thought we need to deal with that in greater detail in the report, so that my successor will be in a position to compare what we have done and how to take the matter forward. And the second part there will deal with the issue of investigation, reporting, and taking the appropriate remedial action after our investigation, accountability, and also deal with the relationship between us and our stakeholders. We will also deal with the strategic management of the Office of the Public Protector from 2002 to until the end of my term, where we'll highlight the achievements, successes, and also indicate the objectives for the new year, in other words, 2009-2010. I'm sure you have the strat plan, and the CEO will deal with that as well. And we'll also be looking at the organizational structure of the Office of the Public Protector. But here what we are referring to is that in each business unit, we are going to extrapolate the achievements, challenges, the successes from each business unit. Your human rights section. I'm sorry, your HR section, finances and the like, so that we know in each section what is the status, so that when the new public protector comes in, he or she will be in a position to know exactly where we are. We will deal with the financial management and accounting. Which obviously will be indicating our reports on corporate governance arrangements, you know, during this period, just to indicate how have we been in terms of our finances. That will be in addition to the report by the Auditor General. And by the way, this was also nice to say, look, since I came here, we followed Jewish had unqualified reports of the Auditor General, and in some instances without a single qualification in our finances. So that's what has been happening. So we're going to highlight that to the successor to say, look, we have been having this healthy institution so that we don't point fingers as to where did things start going wrong. The other issue that we'll briefly deal with it's our international interaction with international organizations of similar bodies. Internationally, excluding Africa, we belong to the International Ombudsman Institute, where worldwide we meet as ombudsmen to discuss best practices. We are a member there. We are also in Africa. We are a member of the African Ombudsman Association. I was appointed the executive secretary of this association since 2003 until now. And we were also mandated to establish a research center for the ombudsman in South Africa at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. The project is completed. It's just awaited funding. The purpose is to make sure that there will be training and research for the ombudsman institution. So maybe this committee will assist us in terms of resourcing this center, because it was the request of the African countries that they see South Africa as a viable country that can carry out that task. And we did discuss this project with the former President Becky when we had the conference here in South Africa, and we were promised that we will be supported. We will also be dealing with the report of provincial and regional offices. As you know, that we have offices in every province, and in some provinces we have regional offices. I had the opportunity of visiting each and every provincial office since the beginning of this year, and this week I'll be spending this week here in the Western Cape. That is my last touch point, and we'll be producing a report so that we can explain the status of each and every province, each and every region, so that it will be easier for my successor to know which provinces are lagging behind, which regions are lagging behind. We'll also look at our reports, you know, since 2002 to 2009, what type of reports have we produced, and the areas in which we conducted investigations, so that we see the trend. Is it justice where we have so many complaints of correctional services? The nature of the high-profile cases that we have investigated. And you'll see when the CEO presents that unlike what appears most in the media, that we are only investigating high-profile cases. We deal with bread and butter issues. Our annual report will show you exactly the nature of the cases that we are dealing with. The other process that I thought we'll engage in is what we have decided to coin as a relay race type of handover, which will consist of an interaction with my successor. Provided there will be a successor on the 23rd of October. We are not aware of the processes, how far the processes are for the appointment of the new public protector. So, but the intention here is to say, look, it will be good to interact with the successor so that he or she will be in a position to ask questions for clarity and what. Because I came in, I was groping in the dark to know what was happening, because there was nobody to do that to me. But above all, we have other internal OPP structure, Office of the Public Protector structure, that will ensure retention of institutional memory. The Deputy Public Protector, as I indicated, was appointed on the 1st of December 2005. She will still be in office. In the event I have to leave before there is a new public protector, then she will take over the office and therefore ensure that transition from me to her and to the subsequent public protector. The chief executive officer who resumed office at the beginning of this year is also there. He is a resource that will remain in the office and will ensure that the institution continues. He performs a number of functions which I list in page 8 there, which I'm sure is not necessary to mention each of them, but with the knowledge of each of those functions, you will realize that it will be possible to ensure that the institution has sufficient resources to be able to move forward. We have what we call executive committee, which consists of the public protector, the deputy public protector, where we sit and discuss policy matters, strategic directions of the office of the public protector, and we document these decisions that we take and the policies, and they are stored in our memory within the knowledge management section where I will be getting to. So when the public protector leaves, this structure will partly remain in place to carry forward what has been started. Over and above, we have what we call MENCO, which is a management committee, which consists of the public protector, the deputy public protector, CEO, and all our provincial managers. Provincial and also national. That's where we meet and discuss all issues pertaining to the office of the public protector. So that structure will continue to be there. So the other structure, which is of importance, is what we call the think tank committee. What the think tank committee does is it operates as a quality assurance committee. After an investigation from the various provinces, a report is drafted and presented to this committee, which consists of all managers who are involved in investigation. And at this committee, they scrutinize the report thoroughly in terms of checking the accuracy of the law, the facts, the findings, and whether the recommendations can be implemented. So it's not only the report by, you know, sometimes when you see that the public protector is biased, you might be forgiven to think that I sit alone in my little corner and write the report. This is the committee where we sit, debate the report, the law and everything, and make the necessary changes, and once this is done, we send it to the editorial committee to correct it, and finally, that's where I sign. So this think tank, as we call it, will continue to exist, and it's underpinned by the secretariat, which is a body that that manages the think tank. And mainly, the secretariat deals with the implementation of recommendations. So sometimes we make recommendations and nobody follows up. So there is a secretariat that sits and looks for each and every recommendation, whether or not it has been implemented, and if not, why, and then we make a follow-up. I can safely say that so far, close to 98% of our recommendations have been implemented. The next important structure, perhaps, is the knowledge management unit, as indicated in page 10, which was established in January 2008 to ensure that organizational memory is stored permanently within the institution. And this institution has, this unit has helped us, for instance, in establishing a portal where you click a button, you can see our policies, everything, documentation, what you need, your leave forms, the status of every document. So it is an important institution because our institutional memory is located into this one. And bearing in mind that we also have a library within the institution where the hard copies of all of these policies are located. And more important, the public protector also has a data protection management manager, as you see there in page 10, to ensure that we don't lose anything. So those are some of the steps that we have taken to ensure that as I leave, I'm as empty as possible. All what I have remains with the institution. We are also developing a precedent system which will indicate the type of cases or complaints that we have handled so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Once a case has been decided and accepted, I'll give an example of pensions. There have been problems around pensions and we conducted a systemic investigation and we made a finding. So each complaint which now comes, we no longer take time to reinvestigate it. If it falls within that particular category, we are able to approach the department and say, look, just pay up, you know about it. And in that way, it accelerates the investigation of cases. Well, there are challenges, really. As I indicate in page 11, and obviously it's the issue around budget. I'm sure I won't talk much. We know that budget has become of essence lately in terms of its availability. We have never been sufficiently resourced as the Office of the Public Protector. It's a challenge which we are facing, and maybe during the presentation it will become very clear. We also say that the other matter is that our budget is channeled through the Department of Justice. We as an institution, we don't participate when our budget is determined. As such, we are not there to make a presentation to the budget committee. We rely on the Department of Justice to do that for us. So it sort of put us in a very difficult situation in terms of how much is allocated to us. And we have not had a very serious problem with the Department of Justice per se, but we know that internationally, our international experience is that where government wants to cap the activities of the public protector, they just sort of changing the act. They just stuff you with a budget, and you don't operate, and you become toothless. So it's a potential challenge which is there. We may not have experienced it, but we are not sure how long this will continue. As I've indicated, throughout my term of office, there was never a time where I could fill all the posts of the Office of the Public Protector. Until now, we have a lot of vacant spaces because our money is not there. You will see when they present the finances that almost 68% of our budget goes to staff, and then your operational finances are not there. But that will be dealt with by the chief financial officer. And the other system which we feel we need to have is this enterprise resourcing planning, which is a very important in as far as integrating the support function process of the Office of the Public Protector is concerned. We need it, and I deal in details at page 13 there what the system can do in terms of integrating systems within the Office of the Public Protector. The Auditor General has also raised issues around it. But because the cost there is close to almost 10 million, we have not managed to get into that. We are still doing it manually, but we really feel that we need it for purposes of financial controlling, payroll, human resource management, including automated leave application forms and etc. You need this type of system today to be able to move with speed and accuracy. I deal with the conditions of appointment of the public protector and deputy public protector as a challenge on two fronts. The first one is as since I leave the office of the public protector, I become a statistic. I'm not employed. I don't know where I'm going. And the challenge that I'm making is that you'll find that only elderly people will apply for this post, you know, towards the end of their active life. It does not open up to the young generation who could come in as young and invigorate the institution. So there's no opportunities for our young generation, because no young man or young woman would want to go and be employed for 7 years and thereafter you start looking for job. What happens in other jurisdictions, for instance Ghana and the like, is the, for instance, you are appointed from the bench, the individual is a judge. At the end of the term as public protector, the individual goes back and resume his or her position as a judge. As is the case with the Independent Electoral Commission, there is a judge in there who's formed part of the commissioner, though on a part-time basis, but he has a permanent employment. When it comes to the Deputy Public Protector, the Deputy Public Protector is appointed in terms of the Public Protector Act, but the determination of a salary is in terms of the SMS. In other words, I sit with two systems in the Office of the Public Protector, because the Public Protector Act provides that we can determine our own salary, terms and conditions. But now when you go to the Deputy Public Protector, the terms and conditions are in the public service. So there is this disjuncture. When you want to increase your salary or to appoint staff at higher level, you are hamstrung, because take for instance you want to appoint a CEO. CEO are not easy to get in the market. You have to attract them. And at the end of the day, you don't want the CEO to earn much more than a deputy public protector. It does happen in other administrations, but what helps there is that there are other perks which balance off the disparity. And we are saying that that constitutes a challenge, and sometimes it's very difficult to manage in terms of administration. The other challenge that we have is this this occupational specific dispensation that we see every day in the media. I don't know whether how much I can talk about that. Well, I'm just lucky that our staff have not started toying as well, but it's a bigger challenge. We have managed to implement the first phase, but we are struggling to implement the second phase because we just don't have money. And unfortunately, we don't sit in the bargaining council where some of these decisions are taken, because it has become a decision of the bargaining council, and we are just told to be, you must implement it. But nobody comes to us and says, look, implement it. Here is the money. They say implement it within your own baseline, which in the end we're just nearing 70-80% of our salary, of our money into salaries. And that presents a very serious challenge. The last one there, it deals with the threat of the public protector. I don't know if I will deal much with that, but what I do emphasize there is the Constitution makes it imperative that organs of state must assist and protect the public protector in his or her operation. But the experience has shown that in some of the reports that were produced by the Office of the Public Protector, there were extreme criticism, some of which were very important, and some of them were way out, personal affront. And you will remember, for instance, the former Minister of Justice, where he went out attacking the public protector personally and the institution. And what we want to highlight here is that at times you would expect that maybe Parliament will come out, will hear a voice of Parliament to say, look, is this right? Is this wrong? But when you are being hammered out there, you don't hear anything, and you are not sure whether you belong to anybody who even if you will stand up to correct us, it's fine. It's good to hear both sides so that it also helps to build us, because the mandate of the public protector is still new. The interpretation is very varied. If you read this judgment, which I think honorable members will read, this one on the oil gate, the judge came out very strong in that case to say, look, the way Maine and Guardian has attacked the person of the public protector, it's an insult, and we shouldn't be attacking this constitutional institution in the manner in which it was done. It's there in the report. Inasmuch as the finding is different, but the judge came out very strong to say, look, there's nothing to suggest that the public protector was protecting high-profile individuals. There's no evidence, not sustained by evidence. But that's what we are saying, to say, look, in order to build us, we'll expect the leadership, particularly our parliament, because we report to parliament to guide us. When we are wrong, to come out strong and tell us exactly, here you are wrong. But when it's completely silent, we become extremely worried. To say, look, how will we grow? Because there's a lot of resource in parliament, resource in terms of strategic direction you want these institutions to take. I've written a lot about it there in the report. And the other one is the retention of skilled staff. Sometimes due to limited resources, we can't compete the challenges out there in the market in terms of retaining staff. So we have a lot of staff resigning, particularly the young and the restless who always run for better pastures elsewhere. The other disturbing issue is our interaction with Parliament, and in particular the Portfolio Committee. I'm saying that surely to interact with the committee, you know, once a year and sometimes just for 2 hours, it's just not enough. We've had instances where we'll come once and sometimes less than an hour and then we'll go back. We feel we are not owned anywhere. We need that interaction in terms of checking whether we are on the right track. And maybe, I hope, as the Honorable Chair has indicated, that we are new in this field. Take us as new. And we feel we are lost somewhere. We don't have a parent. You know, we are just somewhere. Parliament is not there for us. And we are somewhat beginning to be happy, because we see now in the office of the Speaker they are beginning to introduce a section that will be dealing with Chapter 9 institution. We just hope that that will continue. The other issue that we are raising as a challenge is the accessibility of the Office of the Public Protector. You will know that the Constitution mandates that the public protector must be accessible to every citizen in this country. We have tried to have all the provincial offices, regional offices, but we continue to fail to be everywhere because of the vastness of our country. We even came with a project called Project 44M, in other words, to reach out to the 44 million of our people. It's an ambitious program which we want to embark upon to ensure that we reach out to the people. We investigate on average between 13,000 and 15,000 in terms of finalization of cases per year. And we are 44 million in the country. So you can see we are scratching the surface. We have not reach out to all the people in the rural areas. We have established what we call mobile offices in the three provinces, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and Limpopo, as a pilot project where these mobile offices, they go from village to take complaints. Because we have people who have no postal address. When you take a complaint, you don't know how to reach back to that particular individual. So those are still very great challenges for us. Our struggling to know our foreign relations, yeah, I've already dealt partly with foreign relations. But here what I want to illustrate is that ombudsmen, for instance, in other countries, they are ministers. Others are judges. And when they visit us, they expect a treatment that befits their status. So we don't have a budget for that type of behavior in terms of providing, for instance, the security for these high officials. So we don't know whether we must cut off ourselves from foreign relations or do what, because that's where we get some of the best practices, by interacting with this individual. And we are saying we are lacking in terms of dealing with that type of a challenge. I struggled with the lessons learned, you know. Yes, resources is part of it. So, the lessons learned there, I grappled with them. Maybe there are a lot more than I've written there. Because I'm, one thing for sure, I feel I'm much better than I was when I first went or became the public protector. So that's why I say I just listed a few there, but I want to believe that I learned more being in that particular office in terms of my public standing, relations with the public, stakeholders. Sometimes you bite the bullet, even investigate even your own president. It's something which is not easy for anybody to investigate your boss. I remember in one conference there was a question whether or not the ombudsman must investigate cases where he, she has been instructed by a member of parliament who is actually the master of this particular individual. So it's a debate which is ongoing. It was left hanging. There we, in the last one there, we tried to indicate how we think the committee can assist us, you know, to support, but it's just a summary. I mean, we really would like an interaction like this, a regular interaction with us, so that we share the view, we hear what you think, so that we really feel, even our master think we are moving on the right course. But in the absence of that interaction, we are not sure. There are areas where at times you even feel that some of the MPs who have complained, they don't seem to understand exactly the mandate of the public protector. So in sessions like this, we'll be able to debate them so that we remove all the misunderstandings. A few priority issues there, we'll continue to say, look, it's always good to hand over to your successor. And I hope this committee will influence the process of appointing the new public protector so that there will be the smooth handover. We will do our part, but we also expect the committee to do its part and ensure that there is a fit and proper person who will be appointed to take over and succeed. Finally, this is probably my last presentation as public protector. And maybe I should seize the opportunity to thank the Portfolio Committee on Justice. Although some of you say you are new here, but this is an institutional body which will continue to be there. I've worked with the Portfolio Committee for the past 7 years. I've shared a lot of experiences, although I still maintain maybe we could have done more. But I was happy to present my budget before this committee, year after year. I've been criticized on many fronts, and I've learned from those criticisms. As I say, I feel much more stronger than I was when I first became the public protector. And I want to most sincerely thank the committee for its support, assistance, and I want to thank Parliament as well for having worked with me in this difficult journey, which even when I accepted the appointment, I knew it's not going to be an easy task. It's going to be a long and winding road, and indeed, there were many uphills. rope that I'm almost going to hit, to touch it, I feel more confident and happier, because it's even much more difficult at times to finish your contract when you are employed on a contract, and it gives me joy to reach that stage. But finally, we will welcome any suggestion, particularly on the handover, which members might want to give to us. I will end here and stand ready for any proposal. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Mshwana, advocate. All right, advocate Mshwana. Thanks. Must be very careful about these titles. I'm not sure whether how the committee wants to deal with this. There are two main sections of the report, three main sections of the report. The first one was communicating to us how is the office organizing for handover. And I think main elements that were articulated are in that context. And the other issue is the report of the strategic planning and program for this ongoing year, and the CFO report. Now, I'm not sure whether we say should all presentations be done, or would we want to deal with this one separately.
Chair or acting chair, I would want to suggest that we take all the reports and then have questions on all of them afterwards, because I think there's an overlap. So you might ask the public protector something which is covered in the CEO's report, for example.
Doesn't seem that there's no decision yet. It doesn't seem that there's no position. Except the formal one in terms of Parliament. Can we also acknowledge the presence of the chairperson amongst us? You're welcome. I think then we can proceed, Madam Chair. All of you, and then we'll deal with all of you as a full package.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Okay, my presentation basically will be in twofold. One, we'll start with introduction and give you a brief background on the legal framework and the mandate of the Office of the Public Protector. And then go to the performance on strategic objectives, which is 2008-2009. Basically, it's more of a report back to the strategic direction that was presented to the committee and to the National Assembly in the previous financial year. I will touch on the mission statement, the vision, as well as on the budget for the 2008-2009. And then the second part of the presentation will relate basically to the new strategic plan, the 2009 to 2012. This strategic plan has been tabled, was tabled to the National Assembly on the 9th of July. I'll then present the new mission statement, the vision, the organizational strategy going forward, as well as the programs that constitute this new strategy. And then my colleague, the Chief Financial Officer, will then touch on the budget, the 2009-2010 budget. As we know, the mandate, powers, and functions of the public protector are derived from the Constitution, the 1996 Constitution, the Public Protector Act, and the Executive Members Ethics Act. In fact, if I may touch on the Public Protector Act, from what the Public Protector has indicated when he was being insulted, in fact, in terms of that piece of legislation, it's a contempt, it's an offense to insult the Public Protector. So he still has a remedy, the Mail and Guardian, based on that act. the mandate of the public protector, of course, is to strengthen constitutional democracy. We are part of those six Chapter 9 institutions. We investigate matters such as maladministration and delay, abuse of power, any conduct resulting in proper prejudice by organ of state. The main thing being fairness and efficiency in the public administration. The mission statement, of course, is to strengthen the constitutional democracy by conducting investigation, which is our core function, the conducting of the investigation. Where we even suspect improper conduct, the public protector did touch on systemic investigation where we see a trend of some maladministration, and we also have what we call our own initiative and investigation, and of course to make sure that the public know about us and they're accessible to us. I'll touch on that in terms of our strategy, basically on the outreach. How do we go to get out and reach to the people that know about us as well? But that, as I said, relates to the previous financial year, and then we'll indicate how did we achieve that as well. The vision then was to strive for quality and fairness of service delivered by all organs of state. Now, in the report, this one here, we have listed the performance in terms of the strategic plan, but I'll go more on the PowerPoint presentation on that part. That will be from the 1st of April 2008 to the 31st March 2009. I will present to you the statistics and the challenges and the measures we have now decided to adopt in the new strategic plan now to address what happened previously. In the previous financial year, we operated under four programs, which is investigation and reporting, executive management, outreach program, and corporate services. You will see as I present that for this financial year, we'll now be operating under three programs, but I will then go to that in detail as I do the second part of the presentation. Obviously, in respect of Program 1 of the previous financial year, investigation and reporting, the main objective, of course, has been to conduct national and special and provincial investigations that are more effective and efficient. The outcome on that basically has been to improve service delivery as well. Program 1, in respect of the achievements, I will show this in the next slide on the graph. In 2008-2009 financial year, we received 6,780 complaints, which were brought forward from the 2007-2008 financial year, and 12,435 were received. Basically, it means a total of 19,215 complaints were considered. Of these complaints, 13,220 were finalized, and 5,995 were carried over to this financial year. Out of the seven strategic objectives that we set for ourselves in the previous year, five were achieved, and two of those were partially achieved. I will go into details on this on the next slide. On the first chart that I will show now, I will show you the statistics complaint that were put forward and that were received. And then on the second chart, I will be showing you statistics of non-judicial matters that we dealt with. And chart 3 will be the comparison of statistics we received in 2005 until 2009. Chart 4 is a breakdown in terms of gender in respect of the complaints that we received. Chart 5 will be the statistics in respect of cases that are older than 1 year. That has been a challenge for us, and we've set up now a target that we need at least to finish the cases that we receive at least within 9 months. Chart 6 is a sample of an average turnaround times in terms of the cases that we received up to the time that we finalized them. These are the statistics of the complaints that were brought forward received, finalized, and carried over to this financial year. I'm not going to go into details. It's written there per province and for national, but the total comes up there to 6,780. These are the statistics per chart, as I've indicated as well, in respect of the those that we have received and have carried forward to 2009-2010 per province and then the national. And you can see there in terms of the line, the complaints that we finalized, they shot down to 13,220 in the previous financial year. These are matters of non-jurisdictional matters. Non-jurisdictional matters are the matters that the public will refer to us, but obviously we don't have jurisdiction to look at them, and then we refer them to those institutions that are, in fact, well able to attend to them. We've breaking down from national and as per province. I'm not going to go into details, but you can see the total there, just over 3,000. This is the chart, of course, as per graph that I mentioned earlier on, in respect of the statistics of non-jurisdictional matters that were dealt with and referred to other institutions in 2008-2009. It's also per province, per provinces, and as well as at the national. These are the comparison of the statistics received and finalized between 2005-2006 financial year until the last financial year. You can see that there's been a drastic decline in terms of the cases that we've received. I can't give an exact explanation of the decline. Probably that the service delivery in the country is going well, the efficiency of the statement in Shari is well oiled, and there aren't any complaints. It may be other that we need to strengthen our outreach as well, to reach out to the majority of our people, as the public protector has indicated on his ambitious project 44M. This is per class, the comparison of the statistics received and finalized in 2008. Basically, it reflects what I've indicated. We've seen the spiral going down up to 11,280 and shooting up a bit now to 12,135. On the report that we have received now, the first quarterly report, it appears that there has been an escalation as well in terms of the complaints, and that when we report again for this financial year, we may see probably a graph that will be going up to about 17,000 again. That's my prediction based on the quarterly reports that has come in for this first financial year. In terms of the breakdown of the complaints per gender that we have received, we have received 3,302 complaints from males and 1,595 from female. That doesn't mean that females complain less than males, but because the majority of our cases relate to the Department of Justice, which relates to appeals, you find that there are more males in jails waiting for sentencing or for their appeals than females. And we do get a lot of complaints as well relating to females in respect of the maintenance, in respect of social grants, and so forth. These are the statistics of cases older than 1 year as at the beginning of this financial year. You'll notice that there are provinces with smaller population which even have zero cases older than 1 year, the Free State being one of them. At the same time, we have provinces like Limpopo with 136 cases older than 1 year. In fact, we have come up with an intervention in respect of Limpopo because of the number of outstanding cases there. We have sent a team that started yesterday to assist Limpopo to come into line with us, with other provinces in terms of the cases that are outstanding. We're also trying to make sure that we, because most of our cases that we have mentioned in the 13,000, only about 3,000 came at national. The rest came from provinces, which is more on the ground. So we're trying to make sure that although the public presence get here, that there's always been vacancies, but we're trying the utmost best that if there are any vacancies coming up in head office, we don't actually fill them, but we transfer them to the provinces. That's the case with Limpopo. That's what we've actually done as well. If you were to look down there on the pie, you'll see that 136 of the cases released to Limpopo. But we have an intervention there as well. In terms of cases older than 3 months, these 5,000, there are just a lot of them. 2,926 between 7 to 12 months, and 25 months, very few. We're trying by all means to reduce this to about 9 or even quite less. There has been some interventions that we come up with, like an early resolution unit that will deal with those cases that may not really need to take that much, that we can deal within a week or within a month as well. This is the sample of the turnaround times in respect of cases as per class. As you can see that the majority of them now are dealt with within 3 months, and we want to maintain that graph as high as possible, that we finalize our cases within 3 months, and we hope that the early resolution unit that we're about to start will really, really cater for this and in fact double the achievement. In terms of program two, as well, that relates to executive management of the previous strategic plan, the main objective there has been to improve external and external communication into to inculcate into a common vision and to improve the profile of the OPP. One of the outcomes, of course, has been the improved service delivery. We have seen the turnaround times have been reduced. And to increase the awareness and knowledge of the constitutional mandate of the OPP. In fact, we'll see as I deal with outreach that this we have done a number of outreach workshops that we have conducted, and including the mobile office of the public protector in 3 provinces as well. But I'll be coming to that in a short moment. What we have achieved in respect of this program, I've managed to have a corporate staff manual which has been integrated into us. The public protector did talk about the think tank as well. We have come up with an operational process manual for the think tank. Out of the cases that has been referred, 40 of them has already been signed by the public protector, which makes them official public report, public protector reports. I've come up with the guidelines in respect of corporate branding. We're trying to protect the brand of the public protector and to be uniform across. In respect of program 3, which is outreach, the objective here is to empower people through knowledge and ensure accessibility of OPP services. The outcome has been to improve stakeholder perception, cooperation and accessibility of the OPP services. Now, the achievement on this program is simple. 45 advocacy workshops have been conducted. There's been 193 information sessions conducted per province. Out of 852 clinics that were planned in the previous financial year, 783 were in fact conducted, which gives us approximately 95% of the target that we have set for ourselves and we achieved. In terms of program 4, that relates to corporate services, the objective there is to achieve and sustain an effective and efficient corporate support services that is compliant with legislation. The outcome there has been to improve service delivery, which in fact has happened as well. The public protector did touch on the resource program in terms of IT. We have come up with the knowledge and management system and the case management system as well, which makes us be able to see at the click of a mouse how far a particular case is and how far is it going. We have really improved of our internal business processes. We have a well-functioning employee wellness program to ensure that employees that need some wellness do get it within the office. Our employment equity plan has been submitted and approved. We have a well-functioning performance and management system in the office. We've just finalized our performance assessment now, and we're in the process of ensuring that those that qualify for benefits out of that PMF do get that. We have managed in the previous financial year to complete phase one of OSD, which has been implemented. Probably that's the reason why our staff is not toy-toying at the moment. But now the second one that we probably have relates to the second phase. We have done what we need to do. We have done the skills audit, but definitely we don't have money to carry it forward as well. In terms of the challenges that we were having in respect of the previous financial year, relates to the complexity of some of the complaints, as the PP has indicated on capacity constraints. We just don't have enough people to deal or to stand the volumes of the complaints that we get, which results in the high workload. You find out an investigator in some provinces will have about 300 files alone in respect of the complaints he is handling or she is handling. High staff turnover, that is a problem as well that we are having. As we'll find out, this has been the reason for some of the strategic objectives have been partially achieved rather than achieved 100%. The measures that we need to address, which we try to cater for in respect of the new strategic plan, of course, relates to the staff retention to address the high turnover. It's been difficult to implement this strategy without funds to pay these people. Transferring investigating posts from national offices to provinces, I mentioned earlier on this, and that doesn't, we can do this within our baseline, and they were actually doing it as well. But it's not really sustainable. This now brings me to the second phase then of my presentation, which relates to the new strategic plan now, moving forward in terms of the achievement and the challenges that we have previous in the previous financial year, and how now are we moving forward this financial year. We have submitted the strategic plan. It's there in front of you. It's in the pack. It was tabled on the 9th of July to the National Assembly, and it was successfully tabled. The new vision that we have come up for ourselves is to be one of the leading public protector ombudsman institutions in the world. Thank you. Yeah.
The PowerPoint.
It's this document. This one. Yes, that's a separate one. It's 1st April 2009 to 31st March 2012. Yes. Thank you, Chair. The vision that we have put ourselves, of course, with so much achievement that we have done in the previous financial year since the public protector came in for the past 7 years, is to rate ourselves as one of the best institutions in the world. And this is what we strive for and we look forward to achieving. In fact, we can actually rate ourselves among them, because some of the reports that the public protector has been issued has been used as examples in some of the causes that have been presented all over the world by international ombudsman. So we can actually rate ourselves and look forward to be one of the leading public protector institutions of the world. The respective programs, of course, that I will highlight now leads precisely to this vision. For the vision, this is basically the program one, to conduct excellent investigation, which is of course is our core function, and to be accessible to all. And two, to provide the world-class strategic direction as well. And if I may touch on this, we have mostly of the African Ombudsman coming to visit us and looking to the best public, to the best practice for us. They look at us as a shining light, as a star. So we are almost there. Program three, to provide excellent support and services within the organization to deliver on its mandate. Basically, this is the top structure of the public protector. I don't want to repeat on it. And the programs now that we have for this financial year. Program one, of course, is investigation and outreach. Program two, executive management. And program three is corporate support services. You'll notice that the program that we have has been reduced from four in the previous financial year to three this financial year. This is the proposed functional structure that we will be presenting to Parliament to ensure that we're able to carry forward the new strategic vision. You'll notice that most of the work comes from the provinces. Provincial investigation and coordination remains. We have collapsed special investigation and combined it with the national investigation and with outreach, supply chain and management, supply chain management, and then corporate services. I don't have to deal on this because basically that's why we have formulated those functional structures to carry out the function that we need. We already have these three programs that have highlighted and the proposed functional structure to make sure that we lean and mean and able to carry forward the vision. Basically, we've set ourselves the following strategic objective: to be the leading public protector ombudsman in the world. I don't want to repeat this, go back on that. Basically, we've set up almost six of them, and then I will then go on the element of that strategic objective as to what is it that we intend to do to achieve that. We want to be one of the leading ombudsman in the world. Of course, we have to enhance our international participation. The public protector did touch on this. I don't want to repeat on it. In respect of IOMA, he has been the executive secretary. We participated on the International Ombudsman Association. We've established the partnership with the media. We've established a strategic partnership with our stakeholders. If we were to look at page 19 of this document of our strategic plan, we've highlighted all the stakeholders that we interact with, including the relationship we have with them, whether it's cordial, is it bad, is it good, and how do we need them. And we're working on that as well. That will make sure that we have effective, integrated internal and external communication. We have the public protector bulletin that will come out quarterly to our clients. We also have our internal newsletter that will address our staff as to what we do as well. In terms of the second strategic objective, which is to ensure that all allegations of improper conduct by state and its entities are investigated, reported and on, and appropriate remedial action is taken. We have set up the following elements to make sure that we produce the reports as well. We take remedial action and that we monitor the implementation of our recommendations. In respect of strategic objective three, which is to ensure the accessibility of the Office of the Public Protector, we try the best we can to raise the awareness of what we do by reaching out, going out ourselves to the communities, by working with government departments as well. Here in the Western Cape, we participate in with what the provincial government calls the Jamboree, where we go out to the outskirts of the public, where in the farms, basically, to explain to the people what the Office of the Public Protector does. In respect of the third strategic objective, to ensure efficient and effective management and leadership of the Office of the Public Protector, we have ensured that we have automated business system that the Public Protector mentioned, but we still, of course, have problems in terms of funding to complete that project. We monitor and evaluate the overall institutional performance as per our performance management system. We've come up with the service delivery charter, which is being implemented and is being monitored this financial year. We have institutionalized organizational memory through research and knowledge management products. This is strategic objective 4, it's not marked there, is to ensure a high performance culture by training and retaining highly and competent skilled staff. This is a bit difficult, of course, if you don't have money to pay. I'm not going to repeat the challenges the public protector mentioned, but within what we have tried to integrate our HR policies, and we try to put up a high-performance culture through performance management system to ensure that those high flyers who are able to get merit get recognized and are paid for that just to remain within the organization. We have implemented the welfare program, which we monitor as well in terms of its functionality. This, of course, is program one in respect of the investment. Yes.
You proceed. Your numbering is a bit confusing. In this document, you've got strategic objectives 3. Something follows is not numbered.
Yes.
Something follows is not numbered. And what you are calling strategic objective 4
is from 3
is the last one, and there's something before that, and you don't know what that is.
Okay. Where we have strategic objective 3, the one that follows there, which is to ensure the efficient and effective management leadership, that would be strategic objective 4, chairperson, is that that is not numbered there. The one I'm presenting is 5, which is the last one. Yes. So that would be 4, and then the last one would be 5. That relates to ensure high performance culture of attracting and retaining highly competent. Yes. Apologies for that, Chair. I'm not sure if I have to go through the program, but they are there. I'll then ask my colleague to come and present on the budget.
Morning and thank you. My job is a much easier in the sense that the background has been presented.
Yes. Towards the end part of my process.
Most of the things have been discussed by the PP and my colleague CEO. So introduction in terms of finance, the main purpose is to achieve and sustain an efficient corporate support service that is compliant with legislation. Among the legislation is PFMA, Treasury regulations, and other financial regulations, including Income Tax Act. Sorry. And then the next slide is the budget, is the overview of the budget ever since financial year 2001/2002. That increased the budget, it's in thousands.
Which document do you have?
The very same document, you continue with the slides.
Honorable Minister, is this document, but it's got no pages. We will indulge. It's got no pages, but it's this document. It's titled Performance on Strategic Objective 08-09.
The document the document is not numbered, however the slides are numbered. If you continue, we are on slide number 50. 50.
Right at the bottom.
I was just about to stand up and hand over my glasses. However, if I do that, I'll have a challenge. So that slide indicates the budget as from financial year 2001/2002 up to financial year 10-11, how the budget increased. I'm not going to talk about it like that. The next slide, it indicates the percentage change of the budget. In the previous slide, it was from 2001/2002, but in this slide, it's from 2002/2003, in the sense that I could not compute the change during the first financial year. So the change, it indicates how the budget increases, fluctuate. The next slide is budget, its overview, budget split. Still in thousands, it indicates the split between personal expenditure and goods and services. As the public protector has indicated, that you'll see in the next slide, that our personal expenditure is 68%. The graph clearly shows it that the personal expenditure is more than 50% of the operational expenditure. And that itself is a challenge. It's a challenge in the sense that we as an organization, we don't even decide as to how much must we build in as a provision for annual salary improvement. And computing that percentage, it makes sometimes difficult for us to operate. For instance, if you look at financial year 2009/10, if we look at the budget for goods and services, it's 35 million. But if we compare it with the financial year 2010/11, it's less than the previous year. So that is, it indicates a challenge we are sitting with, taking into consideration that there is inflation. So it means that at the end of the day, even services which we would have rendered in financial year 2009/10 will not be in a position to render such services in the the following financial year, in the sense that the budget is less. The next slide, it indicates is the very same information but expressing it in percentage. If you look at personal expenditure, during the financial year 2008/9, it was 69.5%. During the following financial year, 67%. And then during the financial year 2010/11, it's 68%. The next slide indicates the budget for the financial year 2009/10, 2010/11. In November 2008, 107 million was approved, and in January this year we received a letter indicating that we must adjust our budget as it is indicated in the slide. And after the adjustment in January, our total budget for financial year 9/10 is 106 million and the budget for 2010/11 is 110 million. And as I indicated, and then the next line is personal expenditure. As I indicated that in terms of personal expenditure, we project personal expenditure according to guidelines from National Treasury. According to the guidelines, the personal expenditure during the financial year 2010/11, it will be 75.8 million and it will leave us with 34 million for the running of the office. If you remember, the CEO indicated that we have three programs. So we have aligned reduction of the expenditure. So based on the investigation, we allocated the budget in terms of percentage proportion which was allocated during the financial year. Hence, now that there is a reduction in our budget, if you can see program 1, during financial year 2009-10, it's 9.6 million. In the next financial year, it will be 9.4 million. It is proportionally. The next slide is the allocation per program. The allocation per program, it indicates the portion which each and every program takes from the vote. Program number 3, it takes more than half the budget, excluding, we are not including personal expenditure in this slide. It's only, we're talking about the 34 million. The next slide is the allocation according to program 1, which is investigation and outreach. The allocation is in rounded to the nearest 1,000. And we, if you look at the graph below, it shows the allocation within the division, the percentage allocation within the division. In program 1, provincial offices are taking 65.6%. The reason why the greater part of the budget goes to the provincial offices is that that's where our grassroots, our foot soldiers are. Those are the people we expect to outreach, to go there to the remote areas to inform them about the operation of the OPP. Then we proceed to program 2, which is executive support and executive support services. Executive support services, the total budget is in the financial year 2009-10 is 2.2 million, and the next financial year is 2.1 million. And the graph below, it indicates the allocation in percentage within the program. Program number 3, which is corporate support services. Corporate support services command the budget. During the financial year 2009-10, it commanded a budget of almost 20 million, which is 19.6 million. And the effect of the reduction of the budget in the financial year 2010-11 is 19.3 million. The graph below, it indicates the percentage allocation. It does not matter as to which financial year does it relate to, because percentage allocation is the same. The graph below, it indicates the percentage allocation per division within the program. So I was saying that the percentage allocation is the same. It doesn't matter which financial year. Yes. 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 The next slide is the allocation per province. If you remember, in program number 1, where we had provincial allocation, and the total budget was 6.3 million, that's how the 6.3 million is allocated per province among all provinces. No, it's not a program, it's within the program. If you go to slide number 1, provincial offices, with not just slide number 1, program number 1.
That's what it says, it would be slide 57.
Yes. Provincial offices, we've got 6.3 million. Yes, that's the breakdown as to how it's allocated per province. And the next slide, now it takes us to the financial challenge. colleagues have already spoken about it. The OPP, the PP talked about ERP. It's part of the ERP. And then bullet point number two, employee salaries. Employee salaries, it's a serious challenge in the sense that, as I've indicated, that in terms of annual salary improvement, we build that in according to the guidelines from National Treasury. In the event that we settle for a percentage higher than the provision we made, we find that within the vote. So it has a serious implication in our budget. Another matter which relates to salaries is OFD, which the CEO has which the CEO has lamented on it. It has a ripple effect in the sense that if you move a number of employees to another notch, it has a ripple effect in the sense that every year it builds in, it puts more financial constraint in the sense that the personal expenditure increases. Still within salaries, we, as the PP has indicated that this year it is last term, we've got a challenge in paying out his gratuity. When the submission was made to the National Treasury approved only 66%. So we must find 33% within the vote. The next point is a higher rate of staff turnover. The rate of staff turnover, it poses a serious challenge in such a way that during the financial year 2008/9, we filled 59 positions. And the process of filling 59 positions is expensive to the organization in terms of advertising the positions, inviting them for interviews, and also paying the traveling and accommodation in the event the candidate is not coming from the province, within the province. And the next bullet point is the development of coaching model for investigations. The nature of the business which the investigators are performing, it's so complex in such a way that it's difficult. We have tried within the OPP to develop a method, and then we realized that the method is not working, and the best way is to seek the advice from experts. So that is also a challenge. The last bullet point is upgrading of telecommunication systems, which is part of ERP. Thank you.
Just before we file questions, in these three programs, which programs mainly represent the core functions of the institution?
Investigations and
program one. Salary systems. Am I understanding you to be saying that you've got diverse salary system within the institution, and the system of allocating budget is not consistent with the nature of that system? Am I correct?
May you repeat the question?
I'm saying you said you there are those who are being paid in line with the SMS. There are those who are to be paid in line with your discretion. But the budget allocation doesn't cater for that system. Am I correct?
No, you are correct.
Honourable members, it's time for interacting with the report. Honourable member, I'm sorry about this.
Chair, thanks. Look, the maybe just some general comments. You talk a lot about the complaints, that you're dealing with, and you've given us the figures of the numbers and how many are being dealt with and things like that. But we don't get any sense of what they're about. I said the Public Protector's Office would have reported, both in the Public Protector's report and the CEO's report, on the number of the volume of complaints being received that they're investigating, how many they've dealt with, that kind of thing. But we don't get any sense of what those complaints are about. You know, so we don't actually know what you're doing. Occasionally there will be a report, a special report I think you call it, where you will table that report in the National Assembly, a specific investigation you've done. But if you look at slide 11, the statistics of the that's on the CEO's report, the statistics of the complaints brought forward, received, finalized. I've got no sense of what those issues are about. It's slide 11 if anyone can go to it. But yeah, there's no sense of what those are about. What are you doing? Are you making an impact? You know, you talk about finalizing a complaint, but there's no sense of whether the complaint has been... It's slide number 11. That's just the list of all the statistics of all the complaints. And basically there. You don't get any sense of what's the outcome. Obviously you can't, you know, you've got... I think it's maybe about 20,000 complaints in total, but there's no sense of were the people who made the complaints, the complainants, were they satisfied? Did you resolve the matter in the complainant's favor, or did you find that there was no basis for the complaint? Who are the complaints against? What are the lessons being learnt? So there's just no sense of that, and I think that would be important to get some kind of analysis, greater analysis of the complaints. Also then, looking at the complaints, and particularly that chart, there's a disparity between the number of complaints received and the population of a province. Now, I don't know what's going to national office, because obviously that's the main bulk. But, you know, Northwest is a very small province population-wise. But that has by far the bulk of the complaints that you're receiving. More than Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal, which are the largest provinces population-wise. And it's something I've asked before when you've come. You don't get the sense of why. I mean, Eastern Cape Then also looking at that, there's some progress being made in reducing the number of complaints carried over. But... Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, you've got more complaints carried over than you started with at the beginning of that year. That's a problem, I think. But then linked to that is if you go to the financial report, the expenditure per offices, that's on slide 60. You know, again, you would see you're not spending your money proportional to the population. By far the largest budget is for Northwest. I don't know why, you know, that's a million that is spent in the Northwest compared to Gauteng, 850, KZN, very large province population-wise. Slide number 60. Yes, it's up on the screen now. What I'm just saying is the expenditure per province, per provincial office, is not linked. It might be linked to the number of complaints being received, but it's not linked to the population. Why is a province that has a small population getting by far the bulk of the expenditure? Why is a population that is very large in size and large in population, like KwaZulu-Natal, getting less expenditure than the Western Cape, which is a smaller population and I think probably a smaller area? Eastern Cape is a big area, but that's getting a very small, one of the smallest, second smallest, or third smallest with KwaZulu-Natal expenditure. Those factors don't make sense to me. So I just wanted to really highlight those issues. And then I think the other one is I mean, as you know, the issue of the problems between the public protector and the deputy public protector was an issue that the National Assembly had to look at. There was an ad hoc committee. It made recommendations. They came back in 2007 to relook at the public protector's office, or the public protector deputy had to report. Are those issues now resolved? Is the question I'd want to hear that caused the problems in the past.
Yeah.
Any other comment? Or other smarts?
May I ask the public protector, having on occasion been critical in the past, I take note of his request that Parliament should be supportive when the public protector is attacked. I was listening to him, and I will think about it, and I think it's worthwhile noting. But may I ask him, on the matter of the independence of the public protector, now the section that he gave us dealing with that matter was on page 15 of the first book we dealt with, and that concerns entirely the question of the public protector being under what he considers to be unfair attack. It is devoted entirely to that matter. And whereas I would like to know what in fact are the lessons learnt, as on page 19, what are the lessons learnt about 5.1.2, dealing with complaints against senior government officials such as the President and Cabinet Ministers. Mr. Mushwana gave us some input on the difficulty of a relationship with senior people. But may we hear more, because the public protector, after all, must quite simply be independent and impartial and fearless in its investigations. And Mr. Mushwana has just referred to the Oilgate judgment. I, for one, would be very interested to hear more comment from him on that. He has concentrated only on the matter of Judge Boswa apparently censuring the Mail and Guardian for insulting the public protector. But we know that the rest of the findings deal with the judge's dissatisfaction about the investigations. So, can I have more of an assurance from the public protector about the independence and impartiality of the office which he now leaves? And I think it is worth getting clarity on it, because we have been here before during the Chapter 9 ad hoc committee discussions. He indicated that he believes that his institution is subject to the cooperative governance provisions of the Constitution, which of course it is not. And we cited at that time the Constitutional Court's clear interpretations that the Chapter 9 institutions are outside of government, and therefore owes no duty of cooperation. On the contrary, must be fearless and impartial. So as Mr. Mushwana leaves us now, can I just have a more clear positioning on the matter of the relationship between his office, the public protector, and senior government officials and political leaders? Thank you, sir.
Let me just come in, Advocate. Maybe up front, I think one of the challenges when you deal with the Chapter 9 institutions, it goes in line with Honorable Jeff, is that you want to interact with ordinary us. What I mean by that is that what is it that would go wrong in society if there was no public protector? So that you begin to say to an ordinary me, that because you are there, I'm not going to respond to that. So, because you are there, if you do your work properly, becomes better. And if your work is not done properly, these aspects of society get worse. And then you can go to your technical planning and all the other things, which society might not be interested in. That's a very, very crucial issue. Because it is in that context that an ordinary member there in society would say, hey, we need more money for the public protector. Because I'm worried about if there's value for public protector, which I think there is, but it must be articulated in the problem statement somewhere. Issues of correcting the salary system are very, very important because they are linked to the staff turnover. Because you need highly skilled people to effectively do that work so that you don't stay with this vacant protocol post. That's the first issue. And the second issue is what really confuses me. I said I even had the CEO reinforcing something that it is to attack the office of the Parvora is a crime. I think we need to get clarity what we mean by that. Because in a free and a democratic society, as criticizing a public protector necessarily constituting a crime. So when you say attack, what are you talking about? Because I'm worried about the situation where we conflate the importance of independence and compare that to the level at which that office is being criticized, and then decide willy-nilly to say this is an attack or whatever that is. And I think as legal people, you need to help us understand what you're talking about. You need to make us understand, because people will criticize the public protector. And I don't think you are immune, even by the constitution, against being criticized. But when you say it is illegal, I'm not talking about, I know the instances, my worry is that you might be referring to instances that were weird and wild that occurred in the past. And if you use those as a yardstick to determine whether to actually allow them to give a wrong definition of what we mean by challenging the independence of the public protector. If I go to your technical planning, I have to confess to the committee that I think this institution, it's